This episode of Warp 5 is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for your smartphone, tablet, or desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. Also, help us keep Star Trek discussion coming to you each day by becoming a Trek FM patron through Patreon. Get access to exclusive content and become part of the team. You'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm.
Hi, I'm Anthony Montgomery, Ensign Travis Mayweather on Star Trek Enterprise, and you're listening to Trek FM.
How we doing, Trip?
Ready when you are.
Prepare for warp.
Course laid in, sir. Request permission to get underway.
Let's go.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Warp 5, Trek FM's dedicated Enterprise podcast. I'm your host tonight, Will Wynn. Norman Lau, my other co-host, is actually on a Section 31 mission tonight, so I'm taking center chair responsibilities tonight. But no worries, I'm actually joined by a wonderful crew tonight. And tonight's theme is actually all about new arrivals. Because for tonight's episode about Season 3 new arrival Major Hayes, we have our associate producers for Warp 5 on the first time on air, Floyd Dorsey and Mike Morrison. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
I'm really excited because you guys have been really great supporters of both this show and also of the network, but this is the first time both of you have been on air for Warp 5, and I think we're going to have a really great discussion tonight, so I'm really looking forward to that. And of course, Jeff Harlan, Mr. Atos himself, founder of Trekkopedia, is also with us tonight. Hi, Jeff. How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing good. I was just showing you earlier on the other side of the room. I was working on my Trekkopedia site. I've been compiling a list of every Starfleet vessel ever named or appeared on the shows and the books and the comics, what games, what have you. And I'm up through the I's. I'm just starting the J's, and it's pretty large undertaking, but it's looking pretty impressive. So
it's far. Almost like you're building your own class of ship in your own shipyards, but this is your own comprehensive multimedia project, right? I think it's, you had mentioned before, the unified theory of Trek, right? Bringing everything together.
Yeah, and the thing that I really enjoy about this page that I'm working on right now, it's this list is just completely sortable, so you can sort everything by alphabetical, you can sort it by class, you can sort it by the date that the ship was commissioned, you can sort it by the date that the ship ended its service, or the comment section where it says if it was destroyed or if it was decommissioned or what.
That is going to be quite the database, Jeff. I'm very excited. And you can add a section on Major Hayes if you haven't already included it, which is the topic. Is it?
He's great. On the list. He is on the list.
So that's going to be the topic for tonight's show, part one. So we're going to talk about Major Hayes, and he was an important new addition to season 3 of the Zindi arc because he was the leader of the Mako squad that was assigned to the NX-01 as they embarked on their mission into the Delphic Expanse. And I think we're just going to jump right in and talk about the character who was played by Stephen Culp, who, if eagle-eyed fans are aware, played Commander Martin Madden briefly in a deleted scene in Star Trek Nemesis, which unfortunately was not included. I think it was a great scene. But that's the other Trek reference for Stephen Culp. But I'm going to ask you guys a question right now is, did the introduction of Hayes and the overall concept of the Makos make sense in-universe when they were introduced in Season 3?
Without a doubt. You know, I think in order for further development of Starfleet is both a scientific and a defensive arm of the Federation, in order for that to make sense, I think you have to introduce the military. It was an ingenious idea, I think, in terms of taking the first step toward integrating the military into Starfleet, but also as a great little piece of story development to add that layer to the Zindi story, the Zindi arc that highlighted the real dire nature of these circumstances. I mean, who would send a group of explorers to ward off a hostile species? Why not send the Makos?
Yeah, I think so, absolutely. For my headcanon, the Makos' advanced training, weaponry, that was integrated into Starfleet security. Maybe even like special operations, something, you know, you've got regular ship security and then you've got special operations. And also, I even thinking about it, one of the best Star Trek games was Elite Force, and that would be perfect for Makos. That would have been perfect for them. I think it was great. The one thing though I would like to have seen or heard was just a little bit more of a reason for them to be there, like to exist at all. Like what were they doing? Were they fighting off Orions from Earth, holdings or colonies? Why did they have such advanced training? But I mean, I appreciate that they're there, you know, right from the very beginning, like on season 3. So
yeah, it made total sense to have them around for me as well. Like we've said, you know, they mentioned, you know, military and military missions for Starfleet down the line. We saw what looked basically like Marines on Deep Space Nine a couple of times. And there was even a mention in the original series where in the episode Tomorrow's Yesterday, where Captain Kirk said that Starfleet was a combined service, which says to me that perhaps the Makos were integrated into Starfleet at some point down the line. And then that it would also further go into the Deep Space Nine Marines that we saw. And that also ties into all the other stuff like the FOSSA games that had Starfleet Marines in them as well.
Yeah, I can really agree with you guys. That makes a lot of sense, too, in terms of introducing an introductory element to what Earth is doing. And I agree with you, Floyd. On the one hand, it makes a lot of sense what we've seen before. I was also a big fan of Elite Force. The Hazard Team makes a lot of sense that would be the that would carry on the tradition of the Makos. And you bring up a good point too, Jeff, in terms of seeing Starfleet ground forces in DS9 at the Siege of AR-558 on Ajalon Prime. Seeing though, we see those elements, and in Final Frontier, right when they landed on Nimbus, right, you see them in khaki uniforms wearing the blue undershirt, clearly another division of ground forces, not normally.
And then there's
Colonel West. aka Odo in the 23rd century. But you're exactly right, having a clearly non-naval rank. But I think, Floyd, you also bring up a really good point too in terms of the development of the Makos, in the sense that I wanted to see more of a foundation for them. It would be really interesting if they originally had the concept for the Makos from season 1, and that there was always this constant tension between Starfleet's exploratory imperatives and the Makos' military command. Because in a very brief pass, in passing, Archer mentions to Admiral Forrest about, have you talked to General Casey? So there's clearly a flag officer equivalent to the Admiral, who's clearly a general in a different capacity outside of Starfleet, and it's only mentioned in passing, but it brings up a very interesting point in terms of what are their imperatives, right? Are they fighting the Orions? Are they keeping the peace on Earth, you know, after World War III? What are they doing? And I think this is where the season 3, you can see where they're making it up as they go along. And I think it really comes together in the back half of the season, but there's a lot going on in the initial season, in the initial introduction to the season, where they're introducing the Zindi, the Expanse, the Makos, all these concepts, right? And they're going with it. And the audience has to kind of follow along, follow a lot of exposition, and it pays off in the end. But like you said, Flood, I think it would have been terrific if they had developed that tension all the way back in season 1, and Starfleet is always pushing back the urge for the Makos to be more militaristic, more militaristic, more militaristic. It would have been, in my mind, would have made a lot more of a narrative coherence. But that actually brings us up to the next point in terms of Major Hayes. Is I think because he was in so few episodes, he's only in 5 episodes, and those five episodes were the Zindi, the Shipment, Harbinger, Hatchery, and Countdown. Because he was only in those 5 episodes, we don't have a huge grasp on his character, But what we do see in terms of character is how his relationship is defined with Malcolm Reed, because clearly their portfolios, their job descriptions, responsibilities overlap heavily. And I think we know in life, people that are very similar to each other often clash because they're so similar, right? It's almost like they can't exist in the same time and space. So clearly his clash with Malcolm Reed about security, about protocol, about who is in command, who answers to whom, I think plays a big role. So what are your thoughts on how Hayes was developed as a character vis-a-vis Malcolm Reed?
I took to Hayes right away. I mean, the very first scene in the episode one for season three was a Zindi. The very first scene that we see Hayes, he's sitting at the table in the mess hall with the other Zindi. Hoshi walks up. They jump to attention as if, maybe giving her, respect as an officer, but also just traditional chivalry. And I saw that also in Malcolm, the traditional ways, coming from a military background, things like that. I could just tell like right away, Hayes, he was an operator. His line, faster we find the Zindi, the faster we can get to work. And that didn't really, he had like one mission, like, let's do this so I can get back to what protecting Mars or whatever the Makos were assigned to before they were assigned to the Enterprise. And Malcolm, he kind of came across as insecure, he may have played it a little too whiny, he was head of security. Me personally, if it had been me in that spot, here's these guys that they're gung-ho ready to go for it. Okay. As long as I set who's in charge, who's the chain of command and I'm in charge, then sure, man, I'll send you, I'll secure the ship and I'll put you guys on the ground. But I did like the drama for the most part that it made. The way that Reed went didn't seem to it didn't seem like it went with what had come before that.
Well, we're talking about Major Hayes and not Reed, but back to Reed and Floyd, you make a great point. I think the portrayal was a little whiny, but it spoke to the idea that Malcolm was a little insecure with the introduction of the Makos on Enterprise. I do think, though, that they did a decent job developing their relationship over the course of these five episodes, to the point that in that last scene where Malcolm is standing in sick bay, looking down at Hayes's lifeless body, there was a sense of that reality, that epiphany, that this guy and I were cut from the same cloth. I think he realized that when he took that mission of bringing Hoshi home and gave his life to do it. I think that's the moment when Reed really realized what a decent, honorable guy this was, and that they really had more in common than they had as far as differences. And I think whether he meant to do it or not, I think there was a moment there where he lamented that he didn't get to know him and appreciate him more.
Yeah, I've always felt that the conflict between Reed and Hayes seemed a little forced to me. I mean, it just kind of came out of nowhere, because I'm just used to the idea that, you got Marines that their job is anything that has to do off of the ship, and the shipboard security would be concerned with the security of the ship itself, and there didn't really seem to be any room for a conflict in my eyes. But that also again goes back to Reed's insecurity, and I think it also ties into his backstory, where his family had wanted him to go into the military, and all of a sudden he's got military on his ship, and he kind of sees the road not taken, and maybe that's a deeper part of where the conflict came from him. It's more, this could have been me, but instead I'm in this position and I need to make sure that I let everyone know that I'm the one that's in charge here. And that led to a conflict that really shouldn't have happened in the first place, because Hayes didn't seem to have a problem with Reed being in charge of the shipboard security at all.
Yeah, I totally agree with everything you guys said. Exactly. I think there are clear delineations here, right? Malcolm's in charge of tactical aboard the ship, but also the ship's weapons. So, you know, how the ship fights against other ships. That's completely different than what Hayes and his team does in a marine capacity, right? There really should be no overlapping, or there really should be no issue, right? And as professionals, you would expect them to be able to work it out, which is why Archer chewed them out so much, right? Expecting both of them to work it out, especially coming from individuals who he assumed would have, quote-unquote, the most discipline, right? Reed on his crew being the most disciplined, and Hayes obviously being the most disciplined of the Makos. And the insecurity is a big piece of it, too. And, Jeff, that's a really good point about, you know, him coming from a family of that had a Royal Navy pedigree, right? Maybe there was insecurity in terms of maybe he chose the lesser service of Starfleet, something that wasn't as masculine per se, that wasn't as militaristic because it was about exploration. Perhaps there was a lot of that at play. We just don't know. I think that was another thing that happened with season three, was that a lot of these elements were introduced, and I think Stephen Culp did a really great job in terms of doing the best with what he was given. But I think this is, you know, is indicative of Enterprise in terms of it really had the seeds of something that if they had either the time, the forethought, or the opportunity to do so, they could really develop these characters, because they really were beginning to establish a bench of side characters which could have been really great characters down the road, let alone, you know, their distinction as quote-unquote side characters, not main characters. You had Forrest, you had potentially Hayes, you had Saval, you had Sharan, T'Pau, these characters that could have developed into so much more down the road. I think a comment that Culp himself had said was that, you know, he himself thought the character development was very sketchy. But like you said, Floyd, you know, he was a man of action. That's what Stephen Culp himself said. He's a, you know, I identified very quickly that he's just a man of action, a man of few words.
And then definitely a man of few words. Oh my gosh.
Right? Exactly. Very, I mean, almost out of central casting for this is a very straight edge military person, right? And I think the fact they're able to do what they're able to do with the character, you know, I think speaks volumes to how season three ended up turning out. So when we talk about Major Hayes, and you guys had mentioned before his sacrifice at the very end, and that was kind of the inflection point to which he had a rapprochement with Reed, and I think I think people really resonated with his deaths in a more surprising way than they thought they would have with a character that had relatively little screen time. Did you think that his sacrifice in Countdown, when he rescued Hoshi, do you think that was necessary? Or do you think it was... It's a two-part question. So do you think his death was appropriately played? I think it was very sudden, the way he kind of sacrificed himself when he got shot in the beam. Was it played appropriately? Could they have played it, I think, more dramatically? And the part two is, do you think his death was necessary? That was the only way that his character could have been written?
I think it worked as a red shirt death, and he was pretty much the head red shirt of the Makos, and it worked in that sense. I mean, they were in a dangerous situation, and you know, the dice just came up snake eyes for him. At the same time, the character could have gone another way. They could have ended it with him, you know, finishing off the mission and transferring off the ship at the end of the season, or you know, any number of things could have happened. Or they could have continued his storyline into season four, and he and Reed could have finally found a good working relationship between the two of them. There are plenty of ways they could have gone with it, and they chose to kill his character, which I thought made for an interesting story decision.
Yeah, I thought it was it's what I would think of a typical Black Ops death, you know, in operation. I mean, he it wasn't grandeur. It wasn't huge drama. It happened. He was last man off the battlefield. He let his people go first. He started with the package. He got Hoshi off. He let his two Makos get off first. He was holding his ground right there. It reminded me when I was watching this of the movie We Were Soldiers covered the Battle of Ledrang. And Colonel Hal Moore, that was one of the things that he said. He always wanted to be the last man off the battlefield. And Hayes just played that perfectly, I thought. It would have been nice, drama-wise, for him not to hit, or to have went ahead and survived, you know, maybe even wounded terribly. Because I think there's a lot of drama to be seen from a leader, a military leader, who survives those under their command. And then, like, when he saw that, like, Corporal Hawkins that didn't make it from the sphere, you could just read on his face, again, man a few words, but you could read a million words on his face how devastated he was because someone under his command didn't make it. And I think that I liked the way it played. It could always have gone different ways, but I thought that it was fitting. Especially considering, you know, the Mako's operation, the way they operated.
Yeah, I echo that.
Yeah, unfortunately that transporter operation was just a tenth of a second too slow, because the same thing happened to Archer in Broken Bow, and he survived.
Right.
Yeah, and I echo what both you guys said. For Red Shirt, and he was, Jeff, indeed, the head Red Shirt, It was necessary. Honestly, Will, I'm surprised that more Makos didn't die. I think probably there should have been more Makos die. To kill off Hayes, I don't necessarily think it was well played. I think it could have been more dramatic. It could have been more of a self-sacrifice, but at the same time, I appreciate the fact that he was the last man on the battlefield. He held his ground. So there's something to be said for that. He got the, just like you said, Floyd, he got the package out of there first. So in that regard, I think it was played like a true military leader. In terms of drama, it almost seemed, I won't call it a senseless death, but a little more empty in the fact that it was more of a transporter accident. It seemed like, not to take away from the fact that he was shot, but it almost felt like a transporter accident. And, you know, to lose him in that way, I think there definitely could have been a great story there. I think in writing, and I think we've all kind of said it without saying it, writing this character, I mean, from the very beginning was a little sketchy. I mean, in the episode to Zindi, you know, they'd already established that they'd been in the Expanse for 6 weeks, you know, so prior to Hayes' first scene, we've already established that. And then we come to that scene in the mess hall where Hoshi sits down, the Makos all stand up, and now we're introducing ourselves for the first time after 6 weeks. You know, he said, we familiarized ourselves with the bridge crew. Well, we've been in here 6 weeks, and we're just now introducing ourselves to Hoshi. So I think that there was, and Will, you've said before, and I heard on a previous Warp 5 talking about, you know, kind of flying by the seat of their pants in terms of writing this, but missed opportunities along the way to really develop not just Major Hayes, but, you know, this entire Mako team. And for that matter, after Hayes was taken out, the last thing that he said to Malcolm was, you know, look to Cole. She knows the team. So there was another great character that we were introduced to, Amanda Cole, that we didn't really see developed. I would have liked to have seen at least bring her back into season 4 and see the Makos even further integrated into Starfleet. I would have liked to have seen more development of the character. I just never felt like we really got to know him that well.
Yeah, and you'd think that Hoshi would have been somebody that they would have all acquainted themselves with in the first couple of days, because she's the one they get the mail from.
Absolutely.
I've got to tell you, you know, I've heard that intro about the being there for 6 weeks, but when I see that scene in the mess hall, I see that as like the first like 2 days, 3 days. That's just kind of how it plays. Like it's kind of a rewind, fast backward, you know? Mm-hmm. And yeah, I honestly, I've heard it, but then when I see it, I don't actually put it there. I put it way farther back, you know, like when the first, they haven't even left Earth yet. And that scene's taking place.
Headcanon is a wonderful thing.
Yes.
It really is. It solves so many problems.
Exactly. Yes.
It opens so many doors. Actually, I'm really glad you brought that up, Mike, because I actually never realized that. It's amazing. Like, I feel like I love rewatching episodes. I almost feel like it's comforting in a lot of ways, but mm-hmm. I never realized that you're exactly right. They had mentioned that they were there for so long, and yet that scene is played as if, you know, as if it was the first day. And I think Floyd's retcon headcanon makes a lot of sense, but I think everyone pretty much, you know, said what I feel as well, is just they really were flying by the seat of their pants, and they were really, really lucky that season three ended the way that it did, that it actually landed more than you initially thought it was going to. But, you know, it's crazy. We've talked about season three in a previous episode, but season three was also on the precipice too. They didn't even know they're going to get a season four. I mean, this was, I think that's the crazy thing is, you know, during this season, they themselves are really pushed against the wall themselves. They didn't even know they're going to get an additional season. And this was even before its nominal last season. They're already under the same gun. And I think Hayes and the development of Hayes, or rather the underdevelopment of Hayes and the concept of the Makos, is proof to that. So,
well, hey, looking at season three, I mean, think about the time that the United States was in when they made that. You know, like I said, Hayes, he just came off as an operator right there. Mm-hmm. And I can't help, like, when I did this, first of all, I can't believe that Stephen Culp was only in five episodes.
Right.
Because it seemed like he was always there, it seemed like. Mm-hmm. And the Makos were, like, if you watch, there's an unnamed Mako all the time coming around the corner, you know, and helping Archer and doing this. And, but it just, it for the time that we were in, you know, going out of universe into the real world here, that was a representation of, you know, what was going on with the United States and United States military. And, the other night when I was watching it, like right away, it just said to me, Zero Dark 30. It just seemed like, wow, I had not put that together. You know, I just really hadn't put that together that closely yet until I was watching these five episodes again.
Yeah, I think that's also a good point too, is in terms of the tonal shift, obviously in season three, coming off 9/11, leading into the Iraq War, that entire period of time is reflected in Enterprise. It's reflected in terms of the tone of the other shows that were on the air at the time, 24, Battlestar Galactica. Those types of shows were setting the tone. And for better and for worse, I think there are some fans, and I can see their point in terms of it being too dark. But at the same time, Star Trek has also been always reflective of the time period that it's in. So when people say, oh, it's a 9/11 allegory, are you to say that Star Trek is not supposed to address this completely, this zeitgeist changing event, right? I think at the same time, you have to be able to navigate being able to stay, to have a Star Trek message, but also it be relevant and topical and addressing real world concerns. And I think it ended up being that way at the end of season three. The story of season three was about redemption, about reconciliation at the very end. It wasn't just about retribution, about vengeance because of what happened at the very end. So as we wrap up our discussion of Hazy, does anyone have any final thoughts? I think everyone pretty much already covered it, but any other final thoughts in terms of Hayes and the Makos?
I was going to say, if he would have survived, that would have been a cool spinoff series, the Makos. Mm-hmm. You know, Hayes and the Makos. I don't know, that sounds like a band name, but
yeah, it's Hayes and the Makos,
right? But
In
season four, they could have made references to, you know, other missions that they were going on or something, or they could have brought them in when they had basically the con babies, you know, or the those operations. But yeah, that was something. If Hayes could have survived, maybe they would have given him a few more lines, maybe a few more episodes. I don't know.
Yeah, definitely. He was one of those characters, again, that I feel like they could have done a better job developing. Amanda Cole, certainly another Mako that I think could have been further developed. Those were really missed opportunities, something that Deep Space Nine did very well, Enterprise not so much. But I just want to say favorite Hayes moment is the fight in Harbinger. It kind of called back to that scene in Officer and a Gentleman, you know, the big fight scene in Officer and a Gentleman. It was really it was more than a fist fight. I know that sounds superficial. My favorite scene is a fist fight, but that fist fight was so much more than that. And I think it was the first step in these two guys, again, that I think didn't realize they were cut from the same cloth. I think it was the first step in realizing that they had more in common, that there were you know, more things they shared than things that they didn't.
I agree. I think that tension, right? I think after that fight, I think they really started to reconcile and really understand where they were coming from. And I count me as also one of those people that I think Hayes should have survived. I think there are a lot of characters that should have survived. I think that just were killed for the sake of it, you know, for sake of the narrative going forward. Degra being another example of a character I think should have survived season 3. And the same with Hayes should have survived, or at least, like you said, Mike, his successor, Cole, having a bigger role in season 4, but they just, again, kind of become what Jeff said, glorified red shirts. They're always kind of there in the background, but they have no development in terms of anything beyond season 3, really. And I think that's, again, a missed opportunity, either because they didn't have the foresight to do it, but also they only had one more season and they had to cram a lot into season 4. But, you know, Hayes really could have been one of those side characters that DS9 really excelled at, this bench of side characters. You know, you had Rom, you had Nog, you had Dukat, you had Damar, you had Garak. Enterprise began to introduce these characters, Shran first and foremost being, I think, a side character that was going to be a main character if Enterprise would survive. They really had the potential to really expand the universe. They just didn't get around to it. I think the Makos, it's so tantalizingly frustrating because it's a very interesting and almost kind of, it's almost obvious. Like, duh, why wouldn't there be a separate military? Because we're not the Federation Starfleet yet. How do we get there? And I think that's the frustrating thing with Enterprise, is we never quite get to getting there, right? There's so many tantalizing elements. Makos, Hayes, everyone that... at least they're there in terms of introduction and there as a concept in canon, but you only wish that you saw more of them.
So, Will, are you saying that we never quite got from here to there?
You know, I was going to make that joke, Mike, but I'm glad you did it, because that was just straight down the middle. Mike just knocked it straight out the park. That was an easy one. Yeah. That's exactly what I was trying to say. It's a long road.
You set that one up.
Yep. Hayes and the Mako story is just like Enterprise. We wish we could have gotten more.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, I've heard the argument that it was easy to do that on Deep Space Nine because it was a space station. I disagree with that argument, because think about this. They're on a small ship, and that's a small ship, guys. That's a small ship out in deep space. It is a hotbed for great stories. They just missed those opportunities.
Yeah, I think... Not to hammer home this point, but I think, you know, I think Enterprise is just missing that final piece of pulling all those pieces together. And they had it in season 4, but only for a season where they're beginning to coalesce everything into an overarching narrative and where they want to go down the road. I think it just didn't have enough runway at the end of the day. It just didn't have enough runway to really take off, but it was almost there. But I think that was a really great discussion on Hayes. I think most people would have just said, yeah, he's a character there for 5 episodes, and, you know, he had a tension with Reed, and that's about it, and he died. But I think we had a really great conversation touching upon what Hayes represented and the concept of the Makos and what it brought to the overall Star Trek universe. But tonight's episode isn't just about the Makos. It's also about the other new arrivals to Warp 5, which is our associate producers, Floyd and Mike. You've just heard them talk about Major Hayes and the Makos, and a big part of what makes Warp 5 and Trek FM possible is our associate producers, our supporters through Patreon, because we're a completely listener-funded network. We really need your help to kind of bring the programming each and every week to our listeners. And I want to take this opportunity for the rest of the show to kind of introduce Floyd and Mike and kind of ask them how they became involved with Warp 5, how they became involved with Trek FM, and what about Star Trek has made them such lifelong fans to be able to kind of come on and talk with other people across the country, across the world about Star Trek. So anyone want to jump in, Mike or Floyd, in terms of what brought you to Warp 5 and Trek FM?
Well, yeah, I can take that. I was actually streaming an STO podcast, and I the data was just taking way too much on that. So I bought a podcatcher, and I just searched Star Trek, and boom, I was just taken aback with the amount of content with this same logo on it, the Trek FM logo. It was so impressive. I tried out Warp 5. I saw, wow, they've got an Enterprise show. I mean, I saw all the other shows, but they've got an Enterprise show. And I just finished my first initial watch, my first all the way through initial watch off Netflix. And C. Brian Jones and Kate Walsh, and they were interviewing Brandon Braga in episode 2. That was one of my tests. Also, I had I checked Literary Treks, and they had just talked to I can't recall the author's name, but it was one of the Enterprise novels. And man, it just blew my Star Trek fandom up. You know, it was, I shot the Warp 5. I binge listened Standard Orbit. I hit the Orb, Earl Grey, To the Journey. You know, about the same time as when I discovered Axanar. And I became a backer for Axanar. I created a Facebook account at that time, my first Facebook account, so I could access the Axanar fan page and the donors page. And then Axanar gets a show on Trek FM. And that was also about the time that Christopher Jones created the Babel Conference. So it just kind of all just exploded all for me, all just about all at the same time.
So Trek FM was single-handedly responsible for dragging you into social media, Floyd.
Basically,
which
yes.
Could be a double-edged sword. So I don't know if that's either a good or bad thing, but we can take credit for that fully.
So far, it's good. Babel Conference is good. It's great. Mike, how did you find the network?
Yeah, I've been a lifelong Trek fan going all the way back to my childhood, early 1970s. I was born in 70, and so, you know, 73, 74, I'm watching TOS reruns, animated series, playing with my Mego characters on the floor with my little bridge set. I've been a lifelong fan. And 79, when the motion picture come out, I don't care what anybody says, that was a masterpiece. I got into Star Wars a little bit, but I always came back to Star Trek, and I think it was more than just the volume of content. It's the stories, the human stories that they tell so well. I've just been a lifelong fan. So as I was telling you guys on the other side of the room about a year and a half ago, I made the move from West Virginia, where I had lived all but 4 years of my entire life. There, I went to college in Nashville, Tennessee, went back to West Virginia, got married, started a family. I was given an opportunity to move to Dallas, Texas, for my job. And so I lived for the first 3 months out of a hotel. And so I did a lot of Netflix binge watching, but like many Star Trek fans, I was very hungry for new content, and so I started discovering some of the fan series. And I've got to say, there are some great fan series out there. So I'm doing some searching on the internet one night, just looking for, I'm like a junkie, you know, more content. I started seeking out content, and I'm searching around the internet, and I find a podcast called Continuing Mission. And I listened to that particular podcast, which At that time, they were talking about Renegades. And, you know, listening to a description of Renegades, of course, it wasn't very long about that time that, you know, they started talking about Axanar. So I started discovering Warp 5, the Orb, Earl Grey, and the list goes on and on and on. And I so enjoyed listening to the point that Trek FM became very much a part of that new content. Even though we're talking about the old shows, it was new content. And, you know, getting to know the hosts, I felt like I was part of a community. I've got to be honest, I've listened to some of the other podcasts, but I always come back to Trek FM for the quality of the content, the intelligent nature of the conversations. Even though a lot of times we cut up and joke around on the network, there's always a return to good, solid, intelligent conversation. And I appreciate that. Some of the other podcasts out there, you know, not so much. It seems more like, you know, a free for all of just joke telling, sometimes almost demeaning to Star Trek, which I think is, counterintuitive, but, getting a chance to add to my fandom by listening to Trek FM was just, well, it was great. And so I was listening one day, heard Christopher talking about, you know, getting involved in the network. So I jumped in on Patreon first of the year, this past year, and of course got involved in the Babel Conference. And I've got to say, you know, Will, that you all have really made Floyd and I feel like a part of the team. Having the opportunity to talk about the content and you've solicited our input. We really appreciate that. You've made us truly feel like a part of this network. And again, just enlarging that fandom even more. I've had a wonderful opportunity to meet great people. Jeff, I've always enjoyed listening to you anytime you're on the network. You're such a wealth of knowledge, man. And, you know, just to have a chance to meet with other fans and that camaraderie that we share, being a part of the community, that's what it's all about. So I'm proud to be a supporter of Trek FM, proud to be a part of the network, and really have enjoyed getting to know all of you guys.
Yeah, I'll add on what Mike just said there. I mean, I was a TOS fan since I was just little. I've talked about that on the roundtable, how I got started. And boy, to finally get to nail Enterprise down when I was streaming Netflix, it just seemed so close to what TOS was about. The, you know, going into the unknown even more than Kirk. And that was just, you know, Enterprise just kind of, it just caught my attention. Right after that, I finally watched Deep Space Nine. I missed it. That was during my college years, and I just missed it. And boy, that just came right in there. Just, it fits right in with TOS and Enterprise for me. But the the actual, like, the treatment of the shows, as Mike has said, you know, actually intelligently speaking about them, that's what I love about Trek FM. I have tried a few of the other podcasts, and it's just, I don't know, it just kind of gets too corny. You know, almost, they are almost just making fun or not talking about intelligently, or just constantly making mistakes, because I'm not really sure if they actually watch the shows or not that they're talking about. I'm not, you know, they're just always referencing the wrong things. So that was something that really drew me to Trek FM. And then as far as like Warp 5 went, that was the very first show I tried. And I was just so impressed that there was an Enterprise podcast, and not just an Enterprise podcast, but an intelligent Enterprise podcast. And the, I just wanted to make sure Trek FM continues. You know, that's one of the reasons when I saw the Patreon option, there was a donation option, and you could do it a little bit all along. But then when the Patreon came, Trek FM was, it was my commute. It was, you know, like I said, I binge watched the whole library in a matter of months, And I just felt like, man, I've got to give back to that. I've got to support this. This is a great thing I want to see continuing on. And the opportunity to be an associate producer, I just jumped at it. I thought this was just the greatest thing ever. I'd been talking to Norman about it for a little bit, and I told him when my goal was, and then boom, I pushed the button, and I'm so happy to be a supporter of Warp 5 and the entire Trek FM network.
Yeah. You know, I put some thought into it before I became a patron on Patreon, and I got to thinking about all the things that I subscribe to. You know, Netflix. I pay a subscription every month for Netflix, for Hulu. You know, I had XM radio in my car to listen to. And, you know, I pay these subscriptions. I get a couple magazines. I pay for those subscriptions. And here is this incredible database of content out there in the form of Trek FM. I haven't done the math. I don't know how many podcasts are out there altogether, but it's growing every day. We know that. Great quality content that I can listen to on my commute. Some days I travel a lot for my job, so some days my commute's not so much. But there are times when, you know, I spend 8 hours on the road in a day. So, you know, I know I can, plug my iPad in, and, you know, it's the Ready Room. It's Warp 5. It's Standard Orbit. So I've got this great content. So why in the world, even though Trek FM never asked me to subscribe to this content, I almost felt like because I was consuming this content the way I was, it was only right to get involved. It was only right. And honestly, I'll just be straight up. I canceled my XM radio subscription. And that became my Patreon money. Honestly, you know, I just took it from one thing and gave it to another because I was getting so much more from Trek FM. And again, that investment has really paid back to me time and time again, just in the opportunities to get to be a part of the community, to get to be a part of the network, to be able to throw my two cents in and become a part of a much larger community. That's just been invaluable. The perks are incredible.
Yeah, I can tell you, I haven't listened to the radio. I mean, I live in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and my commute, you know, it can be 30 minutes. It can be an hour or so. It depends on how Central Expressway is going there. I haven't listened to the radio since April 2014, and I am extremely confident in that. I know exactly when that was. You know, I might even lock down the day.
Well, it's like, what's a radio? What is this bizarre 20th century technology you speak of? I don't know what this is.
Why do I have to listen to anything except for Star Trek content, you know, without commercials? And, you know, man, those people in the rat race, they don't know what they're missing.
FM? I don't listen to FM. I listen to Trek FM.
There you go.
I really appreciate your guys' enthusiasm because it's infectious. I think that's the thing that makes the Babel Conference and Trek FM. Babel Conference is our Facebook group. So great is that it started very small, but it grew very quickly. It really was like the collective, right? You grow a community. I haven't met any of you folks in person. You probably are all fake people until I meet you in real life. But I feel like I love the fact that I'm able to talk to you, you know, weekly, daily, online, and have a connection with people. But because of technology, you know, I feel like I have a relationship with so many people that I've actually never met physically, quote unquote, in real life, in the flesh, but still have these relationships. And I think that's what makes technology so great. And I love the fact that, you know, Floyd, I think Mike too, you mentioned the Enterprise podcast. I'm not sure if there is another Enterprise podcast out there, although I could be wrong. There might be another Enterprise podcast out there. But I think to my knowledge, I think Warp 5, from my own, you know, exploration of the internet and my own kind of digging around there, I don't think there's another solely Enterprise devoted podcast. You know, of course there's going to be TOS podcasts. Of course there's going to be Next Generation podcasts and Star Trek in general. And that Star Trek in general that talks about Enterprise from time to time. But to my knowledge, there still hasn't been a podcast devote itself solely to this series and a network that devotes a show to each series and to fan films and to books. and to a whole host of things. And I think that's the important key. And we had mentioned on the other side of the room, actually, a connection to Star Trek that I think is worth mentioning. Floyd, you mentioned that you yourself are a science and math teacher, or a teacher of future math and science teachers. Could you explain more about that link? Because I think that's a perfect connection to what Star Trek is about or should be about to people in their real lives.
Yes, I'm actually a clinical professor at the University of Texas at Dallas, and I'm considered a master teacher in the You Teach Dallas program. And what we do is we're in the science and math school of science and math education. And we have, we recruit math and science majors, biology majors, biochemistry majors, neuroscience majors, pure math, statistics. We recruit highly qualified students right away to be math science teachers. And so they're going to end up with their highly qualified degree, but then they also are able to graduate with a teaching degree or a teaching certificate. So I love seeing how talented my students are at math and science, and nearly all of them are fans of some genre, you know, whether it's Star Trek or Doctor Who. There was a huge Doctor Who discussion in the workroom outside my office a couple of weeks ago. And I love being able to know that I'm teaching future math science teachers. And I know that I went into math, like I have a math degree myself, and I know that that's one of the reasons that I pursued that was because of Mr. Spock. I know that that was an influence on me right away. And, you know, to be an astronaut wouldn't be enough. I don't just need to be in space. I need to be in space, you know, standing next to Captain Kirk, you know, or Jonathan Archer here. But I really, really enjoy teaching future math science teachers because I know that's going to make an impact on society. I know every day when I drive home, I've made an impact, and all teachers can have that feeling, you know, on the way to work, what impact can I make today? And then on the way home, what impact did I make today? Cause you know, there's not very many professions that can actually say that they can do something like that every day, you know, doctors and teachers, as far as I know.
You're teaching the world's future blue shirts, Floyd.
Yes.
The universe's future blue shirts. And that is,
yes,
an admirable goal, and it's a very Star Trek goal. And I think, you know, of course, Spock himself would be very, very pleased with that statement. And I think that's the interesting thing about how all of this has evolved, because my own path to Trek FM and Warp 5 in particular is very much like the story of Jeff, Mike, Floyd, and so many other people out there, is that we just discovered this network and the community that was already there. And we just relied on the technologies to leverage us to actually be a community where we interact with each other. And then from there, we were able to branch out and expand our fandom. And like you mentioned before, it really is a content generator, and it's an incubator of your fandom. And I certainly can feel that myself. I've always been a Star Trek fan, but I feel like ever since Trek FM, which I've only really started listening to last summer, it's barely been a year, which is crazy. And now, you know, I'm a host on one of the shows on the network. It's such an incubator for your fandom. I've always thought I was a Star Trek fan, but only until I started listening to Trek FM did I realize, like, wow, I'm really a Star Trek fan now, because I'm talking Star Trek all the time now. It's exponentially greater. And I think a lot of fans, there's definitely demand out there, because there isn't a TV series out there right now. There is a movie that's coming out next year, but it's weird. There's kind of this weird interregnum. There's a movie coming out, but there's not a lot of enthusiasm for it. It's kind of under the radar. The 50th is next year, but it's also kind of under the radar in a lot of ways. I think fans are really hungry for that new content, and because we have content each and every week, it really is, in a way, making up for the space where there isn't a TV series. We're going back and discovering new angles, bringing in new fans with new perspectives, and it's really just adding to that. And for me, I'm just amazed when I think about how quickly things have grown, how far we've gone in so little time, just like humanity in the 22nd century, right? So I think that's always a good parallel. So any other final thoughts, Jeff, Mike, or Floyd, about tonight's topics, about Trek FM or about Major Hayes before we close up?
I just think it's great just talking about Star Trek. Like, I didn't have an outlet to start talk about Star Trek basically my whole life. My grandparents were fans. My parents knew of it, but it was just nothing to talk about. Like, my friends, we didn't really talk about it. You know, it was more sports and things like that. I didn't really have anyone to talk to about Star Trek. And then, like I said, when I saw Trek FM and here's people actually talking intelligently about Star Trek, and then the Babel conference is just amazing. I mean, the conversations that we have on there are just great. I mean, they can, you know, it can be fun, but it can also be, you know, serious and enlightening. I mean, you're seeing some of the stuff if you've been seeing for decades from a completely fresh angle. And I really applaud everyone on the Babel conference. You know, whether you're a regular supporter or you're just on there occasionally, I encourage, even if you just read the posts, just jump in there, man. That's what I did. I mean, I didn't even have a Facebook page. And then I think one of the very first posts I ever made on Facebook was to the Enterprise Warp 5 show. And next thing you know, I'm talking to Christopher Jones about Enterprise. And it was great. It just completely opened up a whole new world for me.
Yeah, I'm a huge boomer, and that's why, you know, when I made the choice, I chose to put my support directly behind Warp 5. It's nice to be able to talk about Starship design, secondary hull or no secondary hull on the NX-01, and not have somebody look at me like I'm an Enar. You know, it's nice to be able to have those conversations. I'll plug the Babel conference as well. I have to say that I've almost never seen a conversation on the Babel conference turn disrespectful. I really think that if anybody's missing out on the Babel conference and you're listening to this podcast, jump on there on Facebook on the Babel conference and get involved in one of the conversations one of the threads. It's a very respectful conversation. We all respect one another. It really is one of the first, I think, real bold steps in making Gene Roddenberry's vision of the future a reality. It's a bold step, and we have a great time talking about not just Star Trek. We talk about other fandoms. We were talking Will's current fascination with the Green Lantern. We've had Star Wars conversations on there.
We've had a lot of Star Wars conversations lately, yeah. I must say.
A lot.
I feel like it's almost like, whoa, the galaxies are merging.
Yeah. Pump the brakes. Pump the brakes.
Well, we're getting a lot more stuff coming out about the upcoming Star Wars movie than we are about the upcoming
Don't
Star
get me started,
movie.
Jeff. So don't get me started. Natural.
I think they're just waiting until after that movie comes out. So maybe in January when the 50th anniversary actually
maybe
starts.
Let's see. We'll see.
That's a whole other conversation.
It really is. So I had a really great conversation tonight with you gentlemen, but Major Hayes and the associate producers of Warp 5 aren't the only things we're talking on Trek FM this week.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
Not interspace. Interphase. Interspace is that's the one where they shrink down and they like go and like fight viruses.
First movie I ever saw letterboxed. I was like, why are there black bars in the top and bottom of the screen? This movie is garbage.
Earl Grey.
Daddy, do pets have a Nexus 2?
The Pexus.
Kirk had a dog in the Nexus 2, didn't he?
Oh, Butler. Butler is now Shadow. So we have the adventures homeward bound of Butler, Porthos, and Spot. Will they make it back to their owners in Montana?
The Orb.
Well, apparently, and did you find this interesting, Matthew? Apparently, the Navark reports directly to the prophets.
Which is awkward, because they don't always show up for meetings, so...
Right.
Yeah.
Plus, you never know what time the meeting is really going to be, right?
That is true. It could have been yesterday, and you might have missed it.
The Ready Room.
Do you think this episode would have been so popular and remain a fan favorite if the Enterprise had been overrun with zebra mussels?
To the journey!
It's fake intimacy.
Thank you.
It is them trying to say Chakotay knows Janeway so well that just by fiddling her comm badge, he knows the crap's gonna hit the fan.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
Weird is relative when you're talking about a book about a guy who taxidermies his mother, so...
The 602 Club.
I think you've hit something here, and I've never thought of it this way, but the true savior of the galaxy, it's not Obi-Wan, it's not Luke Skywalker, it's Aunt Beru.
Literary Treks.
Reagan's a great guy to bring up because his dad was this raging drunk, and, you know, he had to sort of drag him in on, off the porch at night because he'd come home, like, falling down drunk, and, you know, you think of... And here he was, this kind of great man for the country at the time, but he came from a place that was really kind of dark and also very relatable.
Women at Warp.
There's always a touchstone, and this was as close to a touchstone as they ever got with Pulaski.
Plus she banged Riker's dad.
Oh, Andy.
I'm sorry, I just think it's so funny.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
You can always check out these shows and find out what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Starship universe and beyond. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button. That helps us out greatly and makes it easier for other listeners to find the show as they search iTunes. And if you like what you hear on Warp 5 or any of the Trek FM network shows, please leave us a 5-star rating and a review, which will help us greatly increase our visibility for new listeners. And if you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Stitcher, TuneIn, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, and of course, you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website and grab the RSS link as well. Another way you can help keep all of our shows coming to you each week is to become a patron of the network on Patreon. Mike and Floyd talked a lot about it tonight because they're patrons. I'm a patron. Jeff's a patron. This is a great way to support the network and to keep it coming to you each and every week because we're listener supported. So if you visit patreon.com/trekfm, that's patreon.com/trekfm, you'll find our current goals and different milestone contributions along with all other great perks we have for you there. And these perks include early access to content, exclusive content, producer credits like Floyd, Mike, Half Warp 5, seats on our content development team, and more. And a new perk that we've only introduced the past few months, which I think has really taken off, is the Patron Roundtable. So if you contribute to $25 a month or more, you are eligible to join in on a monthly roundtable with other Trek FM hosts and other patrons to talk all things Trek, both in-universe and out-of-universe. It's just a great casual get-together to enjoy our geekdom. Jeff, Mike, and Floyd have all been on the roundtable. We've all had great discussions. I look forward to it each and every month. I think its popularity has surprised me and a lot of other people, but it's been a very, very pleasant surprise, and I think it's just a great way for you to engage your fandom even further. So check us out if you can. And of course, I always thank our associate producers of Warp 5, Floyd and Mike. Thank you for coming on tonight for the very first time. Thank you for your support through the network and for Patreon. You can find us on the Babel Conference, which was mentioned several times today, which is the dedicated Facebook group for Trek FM. If you type in Babel Conference in the Facebook search field, you'll find the Babel Conference. It is a closed group just for our listeners, but if you send a request in, we'll let you in. And as we mentioned before tonight, it's a really great venue for all things Trek, but also all things geek as well. And it's just a really great place for intelligent, respectful conversation. If you'd like to get in touch with us here at Trek FM, you can always find us on trek.fm/contact. You can go to speakpipe.com/trekfm. You can also contact us through Twitter at Trek FM, facebook.com/trekfm, and of course our Facebook group, The Babel Conference. So Jeff, if they want to get in touch with you, what's the best way they can get in touch with you on the internet?
Well, like we were talking about earlier, I have my trekopedia.com website. I'm currently deep into creating the grand unified theory of Trek on the website, just trying to get as much into a encyclopedia as I can. I'm also online on Facebook. Find me pretty much every day on the Babel Conference, as we've mentioned, and also on the Axanar fan group. I post there pretty regularly. I'm also have my comic books that we've talked about in the past. That's bandwidthcomics.com. It's also on Facebook as well. Just search for Bandwidth Comics.
And Floyd?
Yeah, you'll find me on the Babel Conference. If I haven't posted there daily, then I'm reading there daily, and it's very entertaining. Like lately, the work's been pretty hectic. But I'm also, you can find me in the Axanar fan group. And if you're a donor, I'm in the donor group. And I'm a proud supporter of Trek FM and Axanar. And actually, Mike had mentioned earlier other fan projects. I did something similar. And I'm just finding some great fan projects to support all around. So I'm very, very proud to be a Star Trek fan right now.
And Mike?
I'm excited about Pacific 201. Just throw that in there.
I was just going to say the same thing. Pacific 201 and Horizon, very excited.
Yeah, indeed. Indeed. Tommy's doing a great job. I've really enjoyed his updates. You can find me on Facebook, certainly, and the Babel Conference. I'm also on Twitter. My handle is at cmichael1701.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Floyd, again, for joining us tonight. You can always find me at @will_win. It's spelled NGUYEN on Twitter. You can also find me on Facebook, also in the Babel Conference, usually every day, posting there as well. And of course, I'm a proud supporter of the network through Patreon. I'm also a supporter of Axanar in the Axanar fan group and the donors group. Also a big supporter of Pacific 201 and Horizon. I think those are just two fantastic fan films. And I think you can just find me anywhere where Star Trek is being talked about. So please, if you want to find out more about what Trek FM is talking about in the future, I'm also the content manager for the network. So if there are ideas that you want to talk about in terms of ideas or themes that we haven't touched on before, please drop me a line at Twitter, on Facebook, and the Babel Conference. More than happy to chat with you. So thanks for listening, everyone. And join us again next time here in the conference room for another episode of Warp 5.